Andy Hockley reads The Slumber King by Kevin Crossley Holland.
"Owen," said a voice. Owen spun round and looked into the bright eyes of a small, boyish-faced, middle-aged man. "Who are you?" he demanded. "Don't you worry about me," said the man. "Loomis. Loomis is the name." "I mean, how did you know my name?" "I've been watching you," said the man. "You can tell most things by watching. You've been standing here on London Bridge, and your mind has been on a long journey back to your parents, back home to Wales." "How do you know that?" said Owen. "And I can tell you this," said the man. "You should value that stick of yours." Owen looked at his hazel walking stick. He cut it from a bush under the rock of the fortress and seldom went anywhere without it. "Under the place where that stick grew," said Loomis, "there's gold in the earth." "There's gold all over the mountain," said Owen. "Red gold." "No," said the man. "Right under the place where that stick grew. Do you remember it?" Owen nodded. "Take me to it, and the gold is yours." Owen took Loomis with him back to Wales. He led him to his own valley, in the mountains north of Swansea. And they walked past the pool, where the rivers Mellte and Sychrid meet, through a rising wood of oak and ash, and up to an old hazel bush. Immediately above it reared the mighty rock of the fortress. "You're sure?" said Loomis. "This is it," said Owen. The little man sat down on the carpet of twigs and puzzled with the straps of his canvas bag, and at length he pulled out two spades. Owen laughed. "You're full of surprises," he said. "Now," said Loomis, "we've got to dig up this bush. Under the roots, under all the dark webbing, lay a large flat stone, a little bigger than the cover of a manhole. Owen had to dig wide and deep before he was able to prise it up out of the ground. And as it came up, he saw it hit the entrance to a rock passageway." "Ah," said Loomis, raising his eyebrows and smiling at Owen agreeably. "Well, shall I lead the way?" Owen nodded and stepped back. "Don't you worry," said Loomis. "I'll tell you what to do and what not to do." He groped in one pocket, then another, then a third, and fished out two boxes of matches. "You'll need these," he said, handing one box to Owen, "unless you're able to see in the dark." "Can you?" Owen asked. "Of course not," said Loomis. Feet first, Loomis and Owen lowered themselves through the entrance. Then each lit a match, and Owen saw rough, dank walls and a narrow passageway. Starting forward in Loomis's footsteps, he felt the ground gently falling away under his feet. They were going in, under the mountain. "Watch out for the bell," said Loomis. And now his voice sounded eerie and hollow. "Don't touch it, whatever you do."
Owen saw a large bell standing in the middle of the passageway and ducked low under it. Now the passage began to widen and lighten, and suddenly it opened onto a vast cavern. Owen realized that he was standing at the top of a flight of roughly hewn steps, halfway between the cavern roof and floor. And he gazed, breathless, at the wonders below him. Thousands of warriors lay there, sleeping. They lay in a huge circle, their feet pointing inwards and their heads outwards. Each warrior was clad in bright armour, and by the side of each lay his sword, his lance, and his shield. The whole cavern was brightly lit, as if 10,000 candles were burning in it, and all this light came from the warriors' weapons and war gear. Chainmail and plated helmets, the blades of battle axes, spear tips, shield bosses, they all shone with a steady bright light. Owen stared. He saw that one of the warriors was distinguished by the most magnificent war gear. His massive sword was damascened with a wavy serpent pattern. His shield was inlaid with the wild beasts of battle, and at his side lay a flashing crown.
"You see," said Loomis.
"Yes," breathed Owen. "King Arthur. Arthur's warriors." He saw two great heaps in the middle of the circle. One heap of gold coins, one of silver.
"You can take that away," said Loomis. "As much as you can carry."
"The gold and silver," said Owen.
"Not both," said Loomis. "One or the other. They won't wake."
Owen picked his way down the steps and softly past the sleeping heads and into the circle. He filled his pockets with gold, his shoes with gold. He opened his shirt and stuffed gold into it. "And you?" said Owen when he got back to the steps.
Loomis shook his head.
"Why not?" asked Owen.
"What's the use of it?" said Loomis. With that, he led the way out of the cavern. Clinking and clanking, Owen followed him. "Watch the bell," said Loomis. "If you touch it, one of the warriors will wake." "He lift his head," said Loomis, "and ask, 'Is it the day?' And you must call out at once, 'No, not yet. Sleep on.'"
"And then?" Owen whispered.
"And then he'll lay down his head again and go back to sleep."
Owen was so heavy with gold that while he was trying to edge round the bell, he staggered and banged into it. The clapper swung. The bell rang. At once, a sleeping warrior raised his head and called out, "Is it the day?" "No," shouted Owen. "Not yet. Sleep on." So Owen and Loomis got out of the cave and levered the flat stone back over the entrance and replanted the hazel tree.
"You'll be going up the road now to your parents," said Loomis. "And I'm going to walk down out of the mountains."
Owen looked at Loomis, his kind and curiously blank face, his bright blue eyes.
"No point in asking," said Loomis. "Just learn to look."
"Yes," said Owen.
"You've enough gold there to last for years."
"Yes," said Owen again.
"And you can always go back down. You know the way down. And you can take some more. Gold or silver, one or the other. But be careful of that bell."
"No," said Owen quickly. "Not yet. Sleep on."
"That's it," said Loomis.
"And King Arthur?" asked Owen. "And his sleeping warriors?"
"Sleeping and ready," Loomis replied. "Ready for the day when the Black Eagle and the Golden Eagle go to war. When they fight, the ground will tremble. Then the bell will ring and the warriors will wake. Those warriors, they'll fight all the enemies of Wales and conquer the whole island of Britain.
I know a song about that, said Owen.
The Welsh will rise. They will give battle. War bands round the ale and soldiers in swarms. Every Welshman's son will shout for joy.
Loomis looked rather pleased.
The Welsh, he said, drawing himself up to his full height, such as it was, and raising one hand, will have their king and government at Caerleon as they used to do. Wales will be a country of justice and peace for as long as this world lasts.
Owen did not use the gold wisely or well.
True, he did set up his parents in a new house, but that was all he had to show for it. He left his job in stinking London. He never did another day's work. He gambled. And within 5 years, he had very little gold left. So, Owen returned alone to the cavern. He entered it, gazed on sleeping Arthur and his warriors, and once again reeled out under the weight of a great load of gold. And on his way back down the passage, Owen once again bumped into the bell. The bell rang, and a warrior lifted his head.
Is it the day? He called, and his voice echoed around and around the cavern.
Owen was out of breath, and he was scared. So scared that the words froze in his head.
He knew they were in there, and he couldn't remember them.
Several warriors woke now. They came out from the cavern into the gloomy passageway. They took hold of Owen and shook him until the ground around him was carpeted in gold. Then the warriors turned their lances and beat squealing Owen with the wooden shafts. They thrashed him and broke his arms and ribs and legs. Then they threw him out of the passageway onto the soft soil above and drew the flat stone back over the entrance. Owen crawled through the wood, past the pool where the rivers Melltay and Sichrid meet, and down to the little road. There, his own parents found him. And in the high village where he'd been born, he lived poor and crippled for the rest of his life.
Quite often,
Owen returned with friends to the oak and ash and hazel wood, under the soaring dark rock. They looked for the entrance to the cavern. They dug for it. How they dug for it. It was there. And it was not there.
The Slumber King, a story from British Folk Tales, by Kevin Crossley Holland, was read by Andy Hockley. It was produced by Nigel Bryant.